and those who were presbyters, the clergy. And it was very much a two-tier vision of, it was a two-tier vision of the world, and it was a two-tier vision of holiness. And so, for instance, no one would have thought in 1950 of putting the vocation of being married and looking after a family and building up the society of the family and the building as equal to the vocation of a presbyter. But of course, that is one of the great insights of the last 50 or 60 years in Catholicism. And one of the things that has to match that is, of course, the whole question of, we have to address again the whole question of compulsory celibacy. And indeed, one of the interesting things that's happening right now is that Pope Francis is actually hearing requests from places like South America, where there's a vast need not only for every Christian to hear their own vocation, but for these very public ministries. And where they're saying is, well, we know there are people there who have all the skills, and this can be part of their vocation. And if only this technical question were resolved, we would suddenly have lots more ministers. So the Catholic Church is at a crossroads. At the one hand, it has to rediscover vocation. At another level, it has to change some structural things. And it also has to remember that most of the Christian clergy in most of the churches, for most of the time, have all been married. Just, we think of the Greek Church, the Coptic Church, the Armenian Church, all of these churches. These are ancient churches going all the way back to the time of the apostles, as much as the Latin Church, and of course they've never had this discipline outside of monasteries.
Clare, we've talked a little bit about the classes, the Lookout for Better classes. They are running every month, and once a month you come to the Mercy Spirituality Centre, as you said. What do you like at our centre?
It was a really lucky day when we actually found your centre. I have to say that Look Good, Feel Better actively looks for centres that are out of the hospital environment. We do hope that, you know, when we do that, it means that somebody's away from treatment. When we found your wonderful rooms, what struck us first of all was the beautiful setting. And for the women to be able to sit in the room and see your beautiful gardens just gives them a sense of lightness and brightness as well. And Lynn, our volunteer photographer, who actually goes to all of our centres in Auckland, loves coming to Mercy on a Wednesday, because your gardens, we, as much as we can, take the photographs there of the women when they've finished the class, so they have a memento of the day. And often it's the images that the family and friends just go, you know, today was a good day for Mum, or look at that picture. And your centre actually is just such an important area for us, so we thank you very, very much.
John, you are a Lutheran pastor, professor, and community activist. What made you write a biography on Fethullah Gülen, a Turkish Muslim?
It's a great question. Of course, it's a big question as well. My previous book was on religions and violence. The title of the book is Empire of Sacrifice, The Religious Origins of American Violence. And it looked at the way people unfortunately misused and abused religion to create harm along the lines of age, race, and gender in American history. It was not a pleasant book to write. It was painful. So as a sequel to that book, I began looking at religious peace builders, people around the globe who have taken their faith, practice it with integrity, which produces inner peace, of course, but which also can inspire movements for peace. So people such as Mohandas Gandhi, or the recent Nobel Peace Prize winner, who happens to be a Lutheran, Lima Bowie. These individuals have inspired greater justice and peace in their communities and in their nations by drawing on the deep wells of spirituality and theology to unite people. So I was studying a variety of these examples, and Mr. Gülen jumped out to me as someone who has not yet had a critical biography written in English. So as I grew more familiar with him and his writings, and as I grew more familiar with the people of Hizmet, the people of service, like the folks here of the...
Pearl of Island Foundation.
Yes, the Pearl of Island Foundation.
And Hizmet means service.
Hizmet means service in Turkish. Yes, that's correct. As I became more familiar with those people, I really saw analogies between the kinds of movements that Gandhi and Lima Bowie and Martin Luther King Jr. and Lech Walesa in Poland and Mother Teresa, Sister Helen Prejean in the United States had inspired. And so I undertook to study Turkish and began the research in 2010. And I was honestly looking for a happier story. Of course, unfortunately, many of the events in Turkey recently have turned tragic. And I should have known this because religious peace builders are often among the people who are targeted most by demagogues and by people in power through slander, through propaganda, and through falsehoods. And that's been the case with Mr. Gulen and people close to him as well, unfortunately.
My generation, we lived in fear of the Cold War, of the nuclear bomb and all this. For a later generation, after 2001, September 11th, it was fear of terrorism. Today, it's climate change, which many of the 15, 16, 17-year-olds are extremely worried about. And yes, we try to listen to that in Teze. And to try to understand what is God saying to us through these concerns. It's important for us always to listen to those who come to visit us, not to kind of impose some kind of opinion upon them or a program upon them. I think one thing which I notice as well is that in my youth, we were very strong on social justice issues and perhaps there was less emphasis on prayer. We were very active. And at that time, there was a need to speak a lot more about prayer. Today, many people have their own spirituality. The vertical connection is there between them and their God. But the idea of belonging to a community, accepting to be part of a body of other believers, that's not so simple.
No other officials are there apart from a translator. We had a Nigerian priest from Brisbane, Australia, funnily enough, Father Anthony, who has family in Brisbane and family in Nigeria. And Pope Francis would speak in Italian. And I think most of us can get the drift of what he was saying. But then Father Anthony would just translate into English to make sure it was clear for us. And similarly, when we were speaking, I got the impression that Pope Francis could understand English, but Father Anthony would just translate to Italian for him, just to make sure that he had understood what we were saying. And sometimes we were interrupting Father Anthony when he was trying to search for a word. We might say, what about this? And he'd say, oh, yes, that's a good word. But it was very non-intrusive. It's amazing how freely the conversation could flow. As I think, Beata, you might know because you're a translator yourself.
Yeah, I did that a long time, yeah. And I think that's also a sign of the Universal Church, having a pope from Latin America and a translator or interpreter from Nigeria and bishops from New Zealand. That's really universal. And then meeting in Rome.
Absolutely. Actually, one of the things that Pope Francis said when we walked in, he said, I'm from Buenos Aires, from the south too. And I was thinking, well, so was Father Anthony. So we were all from the south, yes. And I said we would love to welcome Pope Francis to the periphery and made the point that Auckland is the largest Polynesian city in the world, and it would be a mecca for people from all the Pacific Islands if he were able to come. When we met with him personally, I was thinking, I don't think I can put that burden on him. I'll leave it to the department to let him know that he's been invited. I think when we raised the issue, they very politely rolled their eyes. I think they just put our name on the list.
Who knows? Pope Francis might have the idea, oh, yes, let's go to the periphery.
Well, that's right. And we made that point. We know that he likes the peripheries.
You can't get further than New Zealand.
Yeah, we made that
Rome.
Point. That's right.
So how long, so the official part of the visit was one day, 2 days?
No, we were in Rome for 8 or 9 days.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. And so the next visit to the Pope will be in how many years, in 6 years?
No, the visit before this was 8 years ago. I think as the number of bishops grows, that the visits become more pronounced, more extended. I guess the Pope just tries to work through a list, and our turn will come around again, I guess, in 8 or 9 years' time.
So maybe that's the reason why Pope Benedict preferred having group meetings, if you just mentioned that the number of bishops is growing.
Yes, absolutely. I think the group meeting is more productive, and it's probably more enjoyable for the bishops and for the Pope himself too.
Yeah. And so what do the bishops from New Zealand take back from Rome and from the experience?
I think we take back a great appreciation of Pope Francis and his groundedness, and he encouraged us with the initiatives that we were taking here in New Zealand. He was very interested to know what we were doing with young people, and sort of saying that we need to be very open and transparent with the questions of young people, like not just giving them pat answers, but try to hear what are they actually asking, what do they want to know, and then try to answer as honestly as we can.
I hope you enjoyed these snippets. Please remember that our office is now closed until we resume on the 15th of January 2020. For any requests, you may still contact us per email at info@mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. Those of you who are on our mailing list will have received our new program booklet for 2020. Our theme will be presence. We have put together an interesting and diverse program. If you haven't received the booklet and it is not displayed in your parish, please send us an email. And I wish you all the best for the last days of the year 2019 and the first days of 2020. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all the best. Thank you very much.